word leadership. And so I figured, okay, we'll try this again. Typed it in again, and again up came the word authority, which does make sense. Because if you're an authority over someone, right, you are technically responsible for leading them. And sadly, not all really know what true leadership means. So if you go to Google and ask, what is the meaning of leadership, you'll get 2,840,000,000 results. I did not have time to go through each of them. yeah, I know, eh? So I figured I would skip what Google has to say and just go back to some books that I've studied in the past on leadership and then, you know, sort of tie it all back into what authority really is. So I'm going to use references from John Maxwell and another gentleman called Oswald Sanders today and a few other authors out there and some other things I've found. So, you know that this message comes from other sources, not just me. So if we go back to Google for a moment, leadership as a noun means the action of leading a group of people or an organization. Some of the other words to describe it is guidance, direction, control, management, and here's that word again, authority. Personally, I've adopted John Maxwell's definition of leadership, which he says leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. You might say that sounds rather simplistic, Al. Well, yes, it is, but if you really think about it, how can you have followers if you don't have influence? So at this point, some of you may be thinking, well, people follow me because I'm their manager, or I'm the supervisor, they have to follow me. And I would actually challenge you on that thought. Do they really have to follow you? No, they could leave the company or the organization. However, if you are their manager or supervisor or their leader, you can influence others. And I'm not talking about manipulating. I'm talking about influencing them to follow because they know that you care about them, even love them, want what's best for them. You inspire them, and they buy into your vision. That's influence. There's a saying that people don't leave an organization, they leave the leader. So this message will not be about church leadership specifically, but leadership and influence in all areas. But it will be applicable to both the church and the secular workforce. So let's look at Jesus. How did he influence others? I think most of us, if some guy walked up to you and said, hey, you don't know me, but stop everything you're doing. So you're working away, renovating homes, doing whatever, doing tech work, whatever you do, fixing appliances. And some guy goes up and says, hey, you don't know me, but hey, drop everything you're doing and follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. Most of us would probably today go, whoa, hang on just a moment, dude. I've got bills to pay, mouths to feed. You know, the bank is definitely going to want their mortgage next week. Ford is definitely going to want the car payment next Friday. And just as a side note, real Christians drive Fords. But Jesus had influence. Jesus had influence. 1 Timothy 3, 2-7 says this, so an elder must be a man whose life is above reproach. He must be faithful to his wife. He must exercise self-control, live wisely, and have a good reputation. He must enjoy having guests in his home, and he must be able to teach. He must not be a heavy drinker or violent. He must be gentle, not quarrelsome, and not love money. He must manage his own family well, having children who respect and obey him. Now, before you challenge me and say, well, that talks about elders, that's in a church setting, but if you actually look at the original meaning of that word, it refers to a person who is a guardian, supervisor, or overseer of a group. So a leader. So going back to my Bible software, which spells the word leadership, A-U-T-H-O-R-I-T-Y, it says it's a possession of and a right to use power. It's the right to act or speak in a certain way in accordance with the authorization of a higher power. Now, all human authority derives from God and is to be exercised in a responsible manner. If only our politicians would read that line, right? So anyway, so that's it, right? So Look at there, it says, Jesus had all authority given to him by God. Matthew 28, 18 actually says that. Jesus says himself, I have been given authority, all authority in heaven and on earth. And he used his authority or leadership or influence to change our world. There's a leadership proverb that says, he who thinks he leads but has no followers is only taking a walk. John Maxwell goes on to say that if you can't influence people, they will not follow you. So I'll say again, and I think we can all agree, that Jesus had influence. For someone that lived in the flesh and blood over 2,000 years ago, his influence is still touching millions, if not billions, of others around the world today. That's a lasting legacy. So let's look at some others and what we can learn about leadership and influence and how we can apply those things to our lives today to help us grow our influence and our leadership. However, before we go any further, some of you may be thinking to yourself, hey, wait a minute, I don't really lead anybody, Al. Well, I'm going to quote John again, and he says that everybody leads at least one person, yourself, right? You lead you. So the question I have, how's that working for you? Would you follow you? Why or why not? Reflect on that. Are you going to lead yourself down the path of fear, or are you going to lead yourself down the path of faith? Are you going to lead yourself down the path of being grumpy, right? Oh, it's a horrible day. It's just I'm grumpy, right? Or are you going to lead yourself down a path of being joyful? This is the day of the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. It's our choice when our feet hit the floor in the morning if we're going to choose the path of grumpiness or choose the path of joyfulness. It's up to you. Are you going to lead yourself down the path of destruction, giving in to whatever is destroying you, spiritually, physically, emotionally? Or are you going to lead yourself down the path of victory and overcoming? We are responsible for leading ourselves. In his book, Spiritual Leadership, Oswald Sanders says that God prepares leaders with a specific place and task in mind. Training methods are adopted to this mission, and natural and spiritual gifts are given with a clear purpose. An example is Paul, who could never have accomplished so much without directed training and divine endowment. So if you desired a leadership position, I'm going to ask you, have you gone through the training? Have you proven yourself worthy of the promotion? And remember, to be in authority, you must first learn to be under authority. He goes on to mention a few leaders in his book, and I can't pronounce this guy's first name, so I'm not even going to attempt, but his last name was Judson. He was a missionary in Burma. He says God gifted him with what he needed for that time. And these are the gifts he mentions. He goes, self-reliance, but balanced with humility. Energy, restrained by prudence. Self-forgetfulness, courage, and a passion for souls. He was trained to walk in those gifts. Martin Luther has been described as a man easy to approach, without personal vanity, and so plain in his tastes that people wondered how he could find any pleasure with so little money. For those that don't know what Luther was responsible for, he was one of the most, and here's that word again, influential figures in Western history. His writings were responsible for sparking the Protestant Reformation in the 1400s. It's also said about him that he had great common sense, sincerity, and honesty. Add to those qualities his courage, conviction, and a passion for Christ. It's no wonder that he inspired loyalty in others that had the strength of steel. Are you inspiring loyalty in others that have a strength of steel? Steel's not easily broken or bent or molded. And what about some biblical examples? What characteristics did they have that helped them lead and influence? So today we're going to look at two of them. First one is Job. Just think about what he went through in his life. He lost all his earthly possessions, all 10 of his children died, and then his health failed. God saw Job was bigger on the inside than on the outside. If you want to lead others, you need to be bigger on the inside than you are on the outside. What does that mean? How are you growing yourself? How are you preparing yourself to handle the trials that come with being a leader? Are you into God's word? Are you praying and seeking him regularly? Are you reading other books, listening to podcasts, audiobooks that focus on the areas that you may lack skill in? For example, maybe it's communication or listening or mindset or influence or teamwork or speaking skills, and the list could go on and on. You need to be bigger on the inside than you are on the outside. But there's more to that. Job was honest inside and out. He was a man of integrity, which means he was whole and he was consistent through and through. He was able to stay true to God and to himself no matter what was thrown at him. That's character. Are you strong enough to go through what Job went through? I would probably have to admit that I am not. I do not. No, exactly. Lord, let this pass from me, right? Like, I do not want to go through what he went through. But he showed great character. Job's capacity to do right was greater than others expected. His capacity for love was deeper than others hoped, and his patience was stronger than others imagined. So if we narrow the life of this leader, Job, down to a few takeaways, being bigger on the inside than the outside means that your character is greater than your reputation. It means that your attitude is better than your circumstances, and it means that your faith is stronger than your vision. So let's look at one more example before we move on. Deborah. If we examine this woman's influence, we will see that she was a rather small woman, but with an air of command. She said this, "In my time, the people of Israel did evil, so God gave us over to the king of Canaan who oppressed us. A few people, like me, pleaded with God to deliver us, and finally," listen to this, "and finally, after 20 years, he heard our cries." Leaders don't give up. Adversity and challenges are going to come, but a leader needs to stay the course and push ahead even when it feels like everything is falling apart around us. So did you hear what I read? After 20 years, he heard our cries. How many of us would stick to it, whatever it may be, for 20 years or longer to experience victory or to receive the answer we've been looking for? If you are a leader of others, you don't have the right to give up or quit. You've accepted the responsibility, which means it's no longer about you, it's about others. So as you grow in leadership, your rights actually decrease because it becomes about others. So I have an image there that I want to throw up on the screen for the people here and anybody that's watching on Facebook. You can see maybe this. This is the typical organization as most would see it in the world, right? Leader on the top, the people supporting that leader. Okay? But I'm going to challenge us. This is what we really need to be. The leader on the bottom supporting the people. It's no longer about us if we lead. It's about everybody else. What's best for them, not what's best for us. So like I said, our rights decrease as our leadership increases. So if we go back to Deborah, with her story, we see God doing the unexpected. At a time when women had few rights, she held court, and Israelites from all over the country came to see her so she could settle their disputes. She was also a prophet, and God used her to deliver messages to his people. So what can we learn from her life? As a leader, we need to be willing to stand out when others don't expect it. God wants to use unexpected people like you and me. He wants men and women who are willing to stand out and go against the grain. As a leader, you need to be willing to stand in the face of adversity. You will be called upon to make tough decisions, and they won't always be popular. John Maxwell told Mark Cole, Mark Cole is the CEO of the John Maxwell Group of Companies, John told him this. He said, "You need to determine if you want to be a leader or if you want to be loved. You can be loved and be a leader, but you cannot allow wanting to be loved stop you from being a leader." Leaders need to be willing to speak out when God expects it. Deborah asked the people of Israel to rise up and fight against the enemies. As a leader, you are going to need to speak up and inspire people. Rally them around you or the vision of your company or your organization or God's vision for your life or your church or your community or even your country. And that requires you going first at times. few years ago, the store I manage, there was some internal conflict going on, some issues. And so I created a manifesto of how we're going to treat each other. It's about 12 points of how we're going to treat each other, our customers, and deal with things within the company internally. Got HR stamp of approval to make sure I wasn't breaking any rules. And I went to a staff meeting one morning, called everybody in, and I said, here's what we're going to do. Here's our manifesto. And I read it off. This is how we're going to treat everybody. This is how we're going to treat each other. This is how we're going to treat our clients. And there's no exceptions. If you can't agree to any one of these points, that's fine. Come and see me afterwards. And I'm going to help you find a new job. I'm not going to fire you, not today, but I'm going to help you find a new job. If you can't agree to any of these, then come and see me. Nobody came to see me. So that, in my mind, you agreed to it. So here's the simple thing. When I see things starting to creep up, I just simply send out the manifesto again in an email, just a quick reminder. And everything calms down and we go back into treating each other with respect, loving each other, supporting each other, being there for each other. But I needed to set the example. I needed to come up with this. I needed to take the step out and speak about this. So as a leader, like Deborah, we need to be willing to step out when others depend on it. If we as leaders, and if you want to be a leader, but are unwilling to step out, then we let our people down. Your courage is their courage. Your obedience is their obedience, and your victory is their victory. I heard this the other day. It said, courage means to be filled with heart. I love that. Are you filled with heart? You know what? I think I put my notes out of order. No, I don't think I did. I didn't. We're good. All right, we're fine. Okay, so being filled with heart and inspiring others and leaders needing to go first, I threw myself off there. I'm sorry, Facebook people. Forgive me, people here. All right, so the story of a sergeant, World War I, an army, and they were in enemy territory, and they needed to cross this road to go and take this town. And everybody was fearful. All the soldiers were in the ditch, and they were cowering in fear, and they were scared, and bullets were whizzing by them, and there was, you know, bombs going off and everything else going off. And this sergeant was trying to get his troop over this road and into so they could take this town. And nobody would go. He yelled at them. He screamed at them. He tried pushing them until finally he got up in the middle of the road himself, stood in the face of danger with bullets ricocheting around him, which then encouraged his people to actually jump up, cross the road, and take the town, and they won the battle. Leaders are going to need to go first. Leaders are going to need to risk. Leaders are going to need to take this risk. So we've seen some examples of leaders, and now let's pull out some qualities. What are some other qualities that we need to possess or develop in order to be effective leaders? One of them is discipline. Sanders goes on to says that without this essential quality, all other gifts remain as dwarf. They cannot grow. So discipline appears first on our list. Before we can conquer the world, we must first conquer ourselves. There's a story of a great statesman who made a speech that turned the tide of national affairs. May I ask you how long you spent preparing that speech? An admirer asked. All my life was the reply. This is going to be a lifelong journey to grow as a leader. Sanders goes on to say, leaders work while others waste time, study while others snooze, and pray while others daydream. A leader has vision. That's their next step, vision. Those who have most powerfully and permanently influenced their generation have been seers. People who have seen more and farther than others see. John says that leaders see before others see and further than others see. They are big picture thinkers. Jeremiah 29:11 says, for I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. And Psalm 40 verse 5 says, Lord my God, you have performed many wonders for us. Your plans for us are too numerous to list. You have no equal. If I tried to recite all the wonderful deeds, I would never come to an end of them. God is a big picture thinker, and we need to adopt that quality. Next, leaders need to have wisdom. If they know, if knowledge is the accumulation of facts and intelligence is the development of reason, wisdom is heavenly discernment. It's insight into the heart of things. Wisdom involves knowing God and the subtleties of the human heart. If we are to lead others effectively and to grow our influence, we need to actually know their heart. What are their dreams, their goals, and their desires? What are they passionate about? We need to connect with them on more than just a surface level. We need to learn how to touch a heart before we can ask for a hand. There was a Harvard Business Review study done, or Harvard University study done, across all job titles, all occupations. Thank you very much. I asked a friend. Anyways, across all occupations, and it was determined, didn't matter what occupation it was, that 15% of the reason you get, keep, and move ahead in a job is based on your technical skills and abilities. Only 15%. 85%, doesn't matter what occupation, of the reason you get, keep, and move ahead in a job is based on your ability to get along with others. Your people skills. In the DISC model of human behavior training, we call that your PQ. So it's not your EQ, how smart you are, it's your PQ, your personality quotient, how gifted you are at getting along with other people. Next is decision making. A visionary man may see, but a leader must decide. If we look at Hebrews 11, we see the catalog of great saints in the Bible, people that saw the vision, counted the cost, made their decision, and went into action. There's a story of a young man beginning his work with the Coast Guard. He and the crew were called to try a desperate rescue in a great storm. Frightened, rain and wind pounding against his face, the man cried out to his captain, "We'll never get back!" And the captain replied, "We don't have to come back, but we must go out." A leader will need to make those tough decisions, and they may not always make sense to those following. They may not be popular, but as a leader, we need to make them. There's been times in my life when I made some pretty poor decisions that's cost me heavily as a leader. When I first got promoted as an assistant manager at Zellers back in the late 80s, very early 90s, I'm a nice guy. Right? I'm not saying that. I tend to be a nice guy. People tend to like me. I get along well with people. But I was too nice. And people walked over me. I was 21 years old. I was not trained to be a leader. In big box retail, hey, you work hard, you can be a manager. And that's basically the qualifications. I had no people skills in the fact that I just wanted everybody to like me, so I was very nice. But what happened? People walked over me. I got transferred to another store, and I said, okay, I'm not going to let that happen again. I've learned my lesson. And I went in there as a mean. I was not nice. What's that King James version of a donkey? Well, I was one of those. A big one. Okay, and I went in there. And to the point where I was mean, I was just rude and mean. And I'm not going to let anybody walk over me. I'm going to be tough and mean. Well, what happened? Well, I'm standing at the checkouts one day, being my tough, mean self in front of customers and staff, and one of the supervisors there called me a-something in front of everybody. And she was right. I was. We became really good friends after that, actually. But I'm saying, I learned balance. I learned that, okay, I can't be a pushover, but I got to be strong, but I found that middle ground that's worked for me now for a lot of years. The next is courage. Sanders says that leaders require courage, always moral courage, and often physical courage as well. Courage is that quality of mind that enables people to encounter danger or difficulty firmly without fear or discouragement. Earlier in this message, I talked about Martin Luther. A few days before his death, he was quoted as saying, "God is afraid of nothing. God can make one so desperately bold." Are you willing to be courageous? Now more than ever, we need courageous leaders to rise up and lead. Leaders that will exhibit these qualities, discipline, vision, wisdom, and able to make decisions, show courage. There's a lot of crap going on out there. And we need people that are willing to stand up and lead and be courageous and be bold. However, that leads us to the last quality, which is equally, if not more important. To lead and influence effectively, we need humility. Humility is the ability to put others before ourselves, to quickly admit our mistakes, to be quick to ask for forgiveness. Proverbs 11, verse 2 says, "Pride leads to disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom." 15:33 says, "Fear of the Lord teaches wisdom. Humility precedes honor." And 29:23 says, "Pride ends in humiliation, while humility brings honor." Samuel Brengel was once introduced as the great Dr. Brengel. I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, so that's just the way it is. And he noted in his diary later that night, he says, "If I appear great in their eyes, the Lord is most graciously helping me see how absolutely nothing I am without him, and helping me to keep little in my own eyes. He does use me, but I am so concerned that he uses me and that it is not of me the work is done." He said, "The axe cannot boast the trees it has cut down. It could do nothing but for the woodsman. He made it, he sharpened it, and he used it. And the moment he throws it aside, it only becomes old iron." Oh, that I may never lose sight of this. We need to have humility. Great leaders show humility. Now, do we need all of these characteristics to be a leader? Yes? No? Maybe? We're all imperfect human beings, and we're not always going to do all of these things well. And that's okay. But we must be open to grow, learn, listen, put in the work, improve, always operating with integrity and sincerity. And if we're not willing to put in the work to develop these, then I would argue we disqualify ourselves from leadership and we will never have great influence. So I want to encourage you today, start leading. Start this self-examination. What do you need to work on? How do we move from where we are to where God actually sees us going? Now, the message part of this is officially over, but I want to mention two other examples of great leadership and people that exhibit all the qualities that I've mentioned today, and that's our pastors. Pastors.